Scripture today is from Job chapter 2, verse 11 to 13. Now when Job's three friends heard of all these troubles that had come upon him, each of them set out from his home, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They met together to go and console and confront him. When they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him, and they raised their voices and wept aloud. They tore their robes and threw dust in the air upon their heads. They sat with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. This ends the reading.
Thank you, Brenda. Good morning, everyone. As we get started today, we're starting our new sermon series, The Gospel According to Minnesota. Today, we're going to talk about a very important topic, hot dish. All right, there it is. First, I just want to invite you, you know, sometimes when we're starting out and we're listening to something, it can help to kind of like wake up our bodies a little. And maybe you don't need this, but if you're like me, sometimes you just need to sort of take a deep breath or do just like a little bit of stretching, or even like a hug feels kind of good sometimes. And there's like science behind this, behind moving a little and touching your own self and breathing deeply and how it re-engages your brain. So I invite you, if you need a moment in this space to re-engage yourself, to feel free to do that with your body and to be in this space. So this is really important. I am not from Minnesota originally. Most of you know this. So the age-old question, hot dish? Anybody call it hot dish? Raise them. Let's see them. Casserole. Okay, I got a few. All right, all right. I would like you to know I did extensive research, like extensive. And it turns out there are many differing opinions on whether hot dish and casserole are even the same thing or not. Some claim that hot dish is the actual meal while casserole is the container. Yes? Some claim that casserole is the thing and hot dish is the thing all by itself, the meal and the container all in one. A hot dish is a hot dish. And a casserole just is a casserole. Some that I read claim that hot dish is an entire meal all in one thing, whereas a casserole can also be like a side, like green bean casserole. That you wouldn't just sit down and eat green bean casserole. You want some turkey and some other stuff to go with it. All in all, I am sorry to report, I have no definitive answer on the distinct difference, as it is actually outlined anywhere scientifically or with proof, on the difference between casserole and hot dish. What I did learn is that Minnesota, 50 states, Minnesota, and a little bit of North Dakota, apparently, all claim the term hot dish. Stand by it, know it, believe it, experience it, eat it, offer it to one another at all of their gatherings, and pretty much everywhere else in the 49 and a half other states, casserole. So I don't know. I mean, if Andrew were here, obviously this is where he would say, so hot dish is clearly superior because we're like the original and we're the only ones that really use it, right? That's what he would say. I'm not going to stake a claim in the ground. I will just tell you that I grew up saying casserole. I moved to Minnesota and someone served me something called funeral hot dish one time, and it was an experience. That's what I'm going to start with. And now I eat hot dish, not super regularly, but sometimes. Also, in my research, because this is just fun, it turns out there's an actual 30-minute documentary done about 9 years ago on a hot dish called Minnesota Hot Dish, : a love story. And I feel like that is how when people talk about hot dish in Minnesota with me, it comes across, it's a love story, right? A few other fun facts, because we just have to really know what we're working with here. Who's wondering, anyone know where hot dish originated? Like, the first instance of an actual documented hot dish? In the 1930s, in a cookbook, Minneapolis Grace Lutheran Church, a ladies' cookbook. That is the first documented written instance, and there is a whole recipe of everything that was in it, a couple pounds of beef, some green beans, some tomato soup, you know, the works. It wasn't until a little bit later in years that Ore-Ida came out with tater tots and thus became the tater tot hot dish, one of the most infamous I've learned in Minnesota. I didn't experience that until I was here for several years, because I do the cooking, so Andrew wouldn't make me one of those. But 1930s, they think because, you know, Great Depression, so practical, there was finally canned food, it was cheaper, more economical, so this whole idea grew of, like, let's dump everything that's fairly cheap and reasonable into one container, put it in the oven, and thus we have a whole meal to serve ourselves, our families, our neighbors, and thus begin the tradition of the hot dish, which is really so much more than just the hot dish, right? I can tell you're already feeling it. The hot dish is something you take to someone, something you share with someone, something you arrive to participate in. That's the hot dish, right? I also have to read, let's see if I can find it really quick, because there was one sentence in here that kind of cracked me up, as an outsider especially. Despite its overwhelming beige aesthetic, hot dish is beloved for its convenience, economy, lack of pretense, and nostalgia. Right? Yes. Yeah, okay, see, I know you guys are feeling it. I know you're feeling it. The hot dish. And I read that sentence in, again, the many articles that I read. I read 5 articles about the hot dish. And that was it. I just knew immediately, based on my experience in these few years of being in Minnesota, that hot dish was about so much more than the economy and the lack of pretense. It's about the nostalgia. It's about the community, right? So it's all fun and well. And then I go ahead and have Brenda read to you a passage from Job, one of, like, the darkest books in the Bible. Here I am making us laugh about hot dish, and what we've just heard in scripture read is this time where this man named Job is going through, like, serious, serious, serious trauma, and he's got some friends that show up. So first, we have to understand exactly what's going on here in Job, because it's a large book with a lot going on, and the writing style in it, very interesting, jumps around a lot. There's a lot of confusion among commentators on, you know, was Job written in one setting? Probably not. Was it even written by the same authors? Maybe not. Different time periods? Quite possibly. But what we do know is that it starts in prose, or storytelling. The first 2 chapters are a story, almost like a fairy tale, but a really dark one. Like, a once upon a time, there was this man named Job. And this man had a wife and many, many children, and he was very prosperous, and he was very well off. He was very happy. And then along comes the accuser, so it is written in most translations, also sometimes translated as Satan, not in the way we think in a modern context, but in the understanding of someone who held court with God among the realms and the angels, and who was sort of more like a prosecuting lawyer. And in the beginning of this story, the accuser comes to God and says, "How do we know that someone actually loves you and respects you and honors you?" And God points out Job, and the accuser says, "Yeah, but Job has everything going for him. I mean, don't you think he just loves you because he's so happy?" And God says, "Well, what do you mean?" And the accuser says, we have to test this out, right? Surely you'll let me test this out, because he obviously only respects you and follows you because he's so well off. And thus begins the tragedy of the story of Job. And this whole thing comes out of this question. This whole book, as we continue to read the many chapters that we won't have time for today, is actually about interpreting theology. Who is God? And what is God's character like? And it's put to the test, and it's put to question, and Job's character is put to question. And this whole thing, when you read it, I took an entire semester course on Job. There's so much going on. You could take so many more. Because it's actually about sort of an argumentative style of proving your point and arguing theology, because it starts with this prose, this story, and then immediately after what we read, where the friends show up, it goes into poetry, and it's written in this dialectic style where they're back and forth, and the friends say something, and Job says something, and the friends say something, and Job says something, and they're arguing about the character of God and what could be causing this suffering. And when I say suffering, Job ends up losing all of his children, almost all of his wealth, and ends up with sores all over his body and his physical health declines. This is what the friends approach when, from a distance, they say he doesn't even look like himself. Not as nice as hot dish. It's really dark. It really is, and it's meant to be dark. The writers want to jar you into paying attention to the story. Because we all know and can feel the gravity of a loss like that would be intense, unspeakable, unfathomable. The writers want to put us in that place of understanding grief and sorrow, and they want to jar us into listening to the arguments that are about to come. And that's all good and well, but to be honest with you, today all I really want to talk about, I just had to give you a little of that, is these friends. And these friends who show up are given names, specific places that they're from. And the interesting thing about Job is this would have been written for the Israelite audience, but about a man not from Israel, and about these friends not from there. So you're jarred, but it's like an arm's length away from your experiences. It's supposed to be removed from what you really understand and the community you're really in. And then these friends show up in this moment where they see from like a distance, like it's like if I'm here and I'm walking to someone way out in the hallway and I've known them my whole life and I walk up and just from all this way apart, I immediately can see that grief has changed them. Right? There was this show when I was growing up that's gonna make you laugh that I used to watch this, but it was called like I don't actually remember the name, but it was this whole theme where someone would get a makeover and like meet with a psychologist and like it's like make them, 10 years younger, you know? And it wasn't actually about the makeover. It was like they suddenly looked younger because they dealt with their trauma. And it was like showing that when we take on grief, we don't process it and we don't have these things that move us through it, it affects our physical being, right? So that's what's happening. These friends are looking and they're like, we don't even recognize him. It's not just the sores on his head, like he's not doing well. So they walk up and they tear their stuff and they throw ash on their head and they just sit for 7 days. They just enter right into his pain. And like in just one more chapter, the friends are gonna mess up a few times, kind of over and over and over, and say some things that are really hurtful and not helpful. But in this brief, shiny, 7-day window, these friends just show up and enter deeply in solidarity with Job. And we know this because these actions of Job are normal during grief back in this time. To tear your clothes, to cover yourself in soot, to sit and to mourn. It's a very normal action of how you physically represent your grief. But when a friend comes and sits with you, and not only sits but does the same things, they're literally saying, I am completely here. Not just to console you, but like, I am grieving with you. That's the power of what these friends are doing. So this book is trying to ask all these difficult theological questions. It's trying to prove some things to us and argue to us, who is God and what is the character of God? And these friends come in, and I love this, and in this brief 2-verse section, they show us the character of God. The character of God is to walk up to those who are sitting and mourning, tear off our clothes, and sit down next to them. It's like that simple. That's pretty much it. So when I was in seminary, still our last semester, we went on Christmas break. We had one semester left, and most of you know that's when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disorder that affects my pancreas. So my pancreas doesn't make insulin. That's what's wrong with me. So I have to give myself insulin to stay alive. Not just to eat, but constantly. I have a pump that runs all day long because most people's bodies make insulin for them all day. It's not just food that affects your insulin and your blood sugar rates. It's your hormones, it's your stress, it's what you're up to with physical activity. It's like a complicated nebulous. So I was diagnosed with one semester left, and we had signed up for this class at a new thing at our seminary called the Farminary, where we were going to go be out on a farm, and it was just getting started. We were the inaugural class, and we were going to share meals together, and we were going to farm the land, and we were going to talk about scripture while living out how we care for the earth. And I was so excited. I got back from break significantly thinner than my doctors would like me to be because I was in diabetic ketoacidosis and quickly losing weight, significantly undernourished and not feeling well, and significantly behind in understanding how I feed myself now. Every meal I had to take a shot. Once a day I had to take a 24-hour acting insulin shot. And the thing about type 1 diabetes is it's not actually always low-carb diets. It's all carbs, and it's carb-specific. So every carb that went into my body once I was diagnosed, and still to this day, I have to calculate it, and then I have to add that total up, put it against the math for my insulin, and I have to give myself the appropriate dose. So, in fact, at that time, my doctors wanted me to put like 15 pounds back on because I had lost so much. I was not on a low-carb diet by any means, but I was on a carb-specific diet, which is kind of exhausting. And when you're new, you can't just quickly calculate it in your head. You're still learning, like, I have to measure this thing, and I have to know what ingredients are in this package. It was a time of grief for me, because for me, loss of food meant loss of community in a lot of ways. Now at the cafeteria, you know, I had to step out and excuse myself to take my shots. I had to step out so I could have the mental space to do my calculating, to think through what I was about to put in my body. But worst of all, on the first day of class for our pharmacy class, after hearing the syllabus and learning that we would be eating once a week together, a potluck that we all bring with different foods, I walked up to the teacher after class and said, I think I need to drop out. I'm really sorry. I don't want to drop out. I was just diagnosed 2 weeks ago. I have no idea how to eat food with all of you, and it seems like that's a huge portion of this class. And I was devastated. And he thought for a couple of minutes, it felt like to me. He didn't say anything. He just stood there. And he said, how comfortable are you having me help you let the community that is this class in on this problem? And I said, well, I don't know. He said, I don't want you to drop out yet. I want you to show up, and I want us to help you through this together. So I said, well, I'll give it like a week or two, but then the deadline for dropping classes is coming up, you know, and I'll have to deal with that. And he said, okay, just give me a couple of weeks. So I showed up, and in the first week, we had a brief discussion about how we could move forward, and I told the class what I was going through, and I told them how I had to count my carbs, and we came up with this decision, that everyone who brought something for the potluck would bring the recipe with them and put it in front of the meal on the table. So it had the amount of ingredients, it had the types of ingredients, and then I could stand there, and yes, this would take some time, but I was then able to know what was in that dish that could go in my body. And let me be honest, there were a lot of like casseroles or hot dishes, right? A lot of mixed together things. So I needed that information because you can't just look at something like a casserole and have any clue, really. I'm better at it now, but especially then. So I said, sure, let's try it. And thus began the journey that was one of my favorite classes, one of my favorite semesters, one of my favorite instances of community at my entire time at seminary. I'm so glad I didn't walk away. I'm so glad that professor entered into my pain with me and asked if I would be willing to let the rest of the class enter in with me. And I'm so glad I said yes instead of no, because I was tempted to say it's not worth it, and I don't want everyone knowing about this. But I didn't. I said yes, and I showed up, and each week I would count what I was putting on my plate, I would walk out the door, I would take my shot, and I would come back and sit down and eat. And it was great. My blood sugars were fine, and I learned, and I grew, and I flourished. I didn't sit on the ground anymore. I got up. I moved around. This is it, right? You all know where I'm going now. This is the beauty of the hot dish. The hot dish isn't just a hot dish. It's not just your friends who show up. It's your friends who show up and sit on the ground, tear off their clothes, and put soot on their heads and say, I am with you in this. And that is where we see and feel and know God's presence. That is where the questions of the text of Job kind of can melt away. We can get at the heart of what they're really trying to ask. Who is God? Where is God? Job's friends showing up doesn't solve the messiness of this text. My friends at seminary doing that doesn't solve the fact that this many years later, I still have to deal with the same thing every time I eat food. It's not going away. Problems can still exist, but we can also be in it and with it together. So this is hot dish. A hot dish is Job's friends showing up and sitting in the muck with him. A hot dish is my friends at seminary showing up and putting recipes in front of the meals. a hot dish is every time I've watched any of you write a card, make a phone call, bring a meal for a new baby who was born, show up with funeral hot dish at the funerals we hear, put on not only for our own members, but for other people we've never even met. A hot dish is every time you show up. And I am so proud to call this place the community that has shown up for me and that I get to show up for. So I know without a shadow of a doubt, our questions will still be there. I know without a shadow of a doubt, we will go through hard times. I hope not as hard as what Job is going through, because that is unthinkable, to lose all of our children. But I also know that in those moments, the best we can do for each other, what we're called to, the character of God that is revealed, the love that is shown, is through when we show up. So put those potatoes on top of that casserole, hot dish. Stir it all together, mix everything into one pot, bake it in the oven, because it's all really made with love. I know that's super, super cheesy. Pun intended. And then show up. I know that you're so good at that. So I want to celebrate you. I want to acknowledge, and I want you to hear, I'm really proud of all of you, because it's something you already do, and I want to remind us that that is the call. When someone walks in and says, I don't know how I can be a part of this class, or when someone is at a distance sitting on the ground weeping, we bring a hot dish. At least I'm pretty sure that's what Minnesotans do. Andrew will confirm it for all of you sometime. So may we be people of the hot dish, or the casserole if that's what you need to get by today, that's okay. And may we show up. Amen.